We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now, back to the Voice of the Grizzlies and the Eric Hasseltine Show, where guests appear via the Landers Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram phone line on 92.9 FM ESPN. Today's special guest host, Jeffrey Wright.
Joe Mullinax is the site manager of SB Nation's Grizzly Bear Blues. He's also the host of Grizzly Bear Blues Live on Blog Talk Radio. You can follow him on Twitter at Joe Mullinax. He joins us each and every Friday on the program. Joe, let's start here. Now that you've had about a day or so to assess the additions of Rich Cho and Greg Grunwald, I beg your pardon. What do you make of the moves?
I like them. I think people are kind of unnecessarily negative towards them. I guess maybe it comes down to your perspective. If your concern is that these guys are going to come in and be the lead decision makers, I would understand being frustrated, but that's not what this is. They're coming in an advisory role, especially Grunwald, but you know, Cho is moving to Memphis, going from part-time to full-time within the organization, and he is going to be an advisor to Kleiman, Zachary Kleiman, who is going to serve that traditional GM role if there was such a thing within the brain trust they're trying to build. But the purpose of those two, at least in my understanding of it, is to help navigate the waters that are NBA opposing front offices. You know, the concept of being worried about dealing with agents and negotiating trades and the day-to-day operations, the bureaucratic red tape that the 30-year-old Zach Kleiman can't have experience in because he hasn't been in an NBA front office long enough or in a higher role to have enough experience in it to know what to do, at least on a consistent basis. So you bring in guys like Cho and Grunwald, and they can help be steadying forces for him, people that he can rely on, get opinions on basketball matters. It sounds like Cho is going to be pretty involved on the analytics side of things. But it's just two more voices, two more pieces to the puzzle as they try to figure out what the direction of this organization is going to be moving forward. So I like the hires because I view them from the perspective of it's two more smart people. Yeah, I wish they weren't lawyers. I wish that, and I hope still, because they say they're still adding people, I hope that they add some more basketball-specific folks, whether it's a longtime coach who's in an advisory role or a former NBA player. And I wrote about that for the blog today over at grizzlybearblues.com. You know, the next step is whoever they hire next, they need to surround Kleiman with as many different perspectives as possible so that he can get as complete a view as possible on any given move or decision they try to make.
What have you made of the strengths and weaknesses of Rich Cho and Greg Grunwald?
Yeah, Grunwald, it throws me off too, buddy, because I live in
the D.C. area. It's the double alliteration.
Yeah.
There's a lot of consonants, a lot of GRs happening there.
And I worry like it's Ernie Grunfeld secretly.
Yeah.
Like, is it really Ernie Grunfeld?
No one needs that.
That's when you'll hear me rant for 30 minutes on 92.9 FM ESPN Memphis if they hired Ernie Grunfeld. But they have not done that. I think in terms of strength, again, it's that experience. I think they said Cho has had over 20 years, or Grunwald as well, combined decades of experience in an NBA front office, working with multiple different teams, the Hornets, the Trailblazers, the Raptors, the Knicks. You know, all between the two of them, they have a ton of connections, a ton of understanding of how business works in the NBA. And again, Zachary Kleiman is 30 years old. He isn't able to have that concept because he doesn't have the life experience within an NBA front office yet. So I think their strength is their ability to help him kind of figure out what the job actually looks like. They've seen a lot of stuff. They've seen things go well, and they've seen things go poorly. You know, folks like to point out the Nicola Batum contract, for example, with Cho and other mistakes that these guys have made along the way. Think about the mistakes you've made in your life, Jeffrey. Have you learned from most of those mistakes? I know I have.
I mean, you learned from the mistakes. I think it depends on the mistake. I have a tendency to be maybe a little hard-headed.
Oh, but I mean, in hindsight, if you went to Rich Cho right now and Peter Ebbeson at The Athletic had a chance to talk with him and it was a really good write-up, he didn't ask this specifically, but if you went and you said, you know what, would you sign Nicola Batum to a near-max contract? The answer would probably be no, right? In hindsight, maybe that wasn't the best decision. But at the same time, everything has to be in context. Charlotte thought Batum could be the last piece on a team that had won, I think, 46 or 48 games the year prior. Everything has context and understanding. So everybody has successes and failures in their professional life, and you pay for the failures, especially when so much money and so many other things are involved at the pro level. But at the same time, you can't take away from that experience. So in terms of weaknesses, I think you can point on both of their resumes and their ledgers, so to speak, of times where they made poor investments, bad contracts. You know, I'm sure Frank Kaminsky and that selection at 9 overall all those drafts ago is maybe a regret. But in the specific case of Cho, who's going to be more involved than Grunwald, how much of that was Michael Jordan?
Sure.
You know, how much was Michael Jordan pulling the strings? And as the owner, you know, again, we talk about Para to Kleiman, how much was it Jordan to Cho, hey, this is what we're doing, and you got to do what your boss says. So as long as they're in an advisory role, like I said, helping kind of navigate, figure out how this is all going to work, I like the hires. I think that he needs as many different perspectives, and hopefully they add in terms of life experience, like I said, players, coaches, former NBA lifers, that sort of thing. The all-lawyer thing doesn't bother me as much as it does other people, but I definitely get that perspective, and I hope that as they continue to build this 2019 brain trust concept, they add some different thought processes into the room.
What about those that would view that these moves are essentially just kind of playing musical chairs when within the franchise? You had people that are already here, and it's mainly just kind of trying to show that we're doing something different, but in reality, you got the same decision makers involved. You've just changed roles.
Well, I think it's kind of playing with the definition of already there. And I'll give you an example. I am technically a contractor for Vox Media, which is the parent company of SB Nation. I get paid, I make money, but I'm a part-time employee, or I'm not even an employee, I'm a part-time contractor, I get a stipend. I'm not somebody who gets benefits. I'm not considered an employee by them. Then you have somebody like a Tom Ziller or a folks like that are full-time writers for SBNation.com, they're employees. You know, they have benefits. They are employees of Vox Media. If I were to get a promotion to the mothership, quote-unquote, and I started writing for SB Nation full-time, and it wasn't just about the Grizzlies anymore, is that rearranging chairs? No, it's not. I have a new job. I have new responsibility. I have a heightened role within the organization. And that doesn't mean that it's just rearranging furniture. To me, that's kind of like what's happening here. You know, Cho was an advisor. Grunwald was an advisor. And now you have Cho looking for housing in Memphis. He's moving to the city. They're increasing their involvement. So I don't necessarily see it as more of the same. And I think that one of the reasons people say that is that Chris Wallace is still on the payroll. I think a big issue there is how people perceive Chris Wallace, because he's kind of like the boogeyman, right? You see him around the corner, you worry, oh gosh, he's still there. Is he still pulling the strings? I think that people, and I wrote about this for the blog today, you know, the perception of Chris Wallace and the silence that's kind of surrounded the organization from a leadership standpoint, within that void, a lot of noise has been allowed to fill it, and a lot of doubt, a lot of concern. And I think that's where you're kind of at right now. In the absence of real leadership the last couple of years, folks have been able to kind of control the narrative that the Grizzlies should be able to control. And they're terrified that Chris Wallace is still involved somehow, or, you know, this is just kind of a rearranging of what already was, when if you actually step back and look at it, it's pretty clear they're making some substantial changes to the way that they're doing things.
Talking, of course, with Joe Mullinax of Grizzly Bear Blues. He joins us each and every Friday here on the program. As always, go give him a follow on Twitter, at Joe Mullinax. Also, check out his podcast, Grizzly Bear Blues Live. It's on Blog Talk Radio. Okay, one of the things that you've started to weigh in on Twitter, and I wanted to get your thoughts, we're now officially in hypothetical season. I saw over the big lead, we now have the power rankings of best baseball movies. I'm pretty sure it was in response to another bad list, but we've officially hit that point of this of the sports calendar. But in terms of the Grizzlies, one of the biggest questions is, you know, what is the best way to go about trying to begin this rebuild, if you will? And one of the thoughts is, if the Grizzlies wound up just staying at the number eight spot, trying to make a move into make a play where they can get to the number two pick, if you will. I'll humor you. Do you think there's a realistic deal to be made where the Grizzlies could actually move up into that slot?
Maybe. And I think that where it comes from is how inept the Phoenix Suns are. And if
you have
are
my
listening
attention.
To this and you're thinking, I don't know, that wouldn't make a ton of sense. The Phoenix Suns are pretty inept. Just look at their draft. If you think the Grizzlies' draft history is bad, Phoenix is much better. They've been rebuilding for almost a decade now, if not longer, and they're still struggling. So if you take Phoenix, who is getting desperate, they want to be competitive. You hear Devin Booker all the time complaining about how the team's struggling. They have talent, but for whatever reason, it's not clicking. I think if Phoenix is second or third in the lottery and you're in agreement to pick for each other, as Memphis has done in previous drafts, and Phoenix would take whoever the Grizzlies wanted at two or three, John Morant, R.J. Barrett, whatever, and Memphis gave them Mike Conley an eight, I think that's possible. I don't think that's probable. I would imagine Phoenix, if John Morant is there at two, they're going to want John Morant in theory. But again, if they're getting impatient and they think Conley can help kind of stabilize that locker room, be a star for them, and be a good veteran leader in that locker room, because Phoenix is going to have a ton of cap space, then I do believe that there's potential there for something of that ilk, something of that structure. If anybody in one, nobody's trading one, unless it's for somebody like Anthony Davis. He's probably the floor of what that value may be. And even then, you probably have some debate. Is Anthony Davis worth Zion Williamson? I think there's an interesting conversation to be had there. But two or three, I think it comes down to if it's Phoenix. You know, the Knicks, they're probably in the mix to get Zion. If they fall all the way to four, maybe the Knicks could be interested if they fall to four. But then, is that worth Mike Conley to you? Is getting DeAndre Hunter, Jarrett Culver, you know, Darius Garland probably being a reach at four, is all of that worth trading Mike Conley? I don't know that that's necessarily accurate either. So I think that the key to that question is the Phoenix Suns, and that's probably where it ends.
Yeah, I think I can buy that. But at the end of the day, you're depending on someone, or you're depending on a franchise going against the norm. Like, you know, I was
right.
Looking it up. I guess you can make the case that with the Kevin Love to Cleveland, Cleveland traded the rights to Wiggins. And so but like when you look back at it, the last time a true draft pick was traded, top three draft pick was traded, it was O.J. Mayo to the Grizzlies. I mean,
right.
It's, you know, that's going back to the 2008 draft, I believe. So, I mean, it is funny. And that's the thing, like, when I think I had some people that were coming at me on Twitter, and I wasn't even, you know, I wasn't even hashtag mad online or hashtag triggered. I was just, I was simply just stating it's, you can make the case that perhaps draft picks might be valued too high because the likelihood of all of them working out is not great. You can make a case there, but the evidence suggests that NBA franchises value top three picks.
Absolutely, and I think a good example of what you're talking about in terms of valuing those picks too much compared to what reality is a hypothetical that I put out on Twitter. I like to set the world on fire on a Friday afternoon.
We thank you for that.
I put out the hypothetical. Yeah, it's good for hashtag content.
Hashtag content, baby.
The hypothetical idea of the Grizzlies winning the lottery, quote-unquote, and getting the two overall. Okay, so Zion goes one to whoever gets the first overall pick. Doesn't really matter in this scenario. The Grizzlies are two. They call Philadelphia and say, hey, Philly, we will give you Mike Conley, whoever you want it to, John Morant or R.J. Barrett, somebody else, but probably John Morant, I think most would agree at this point, and Dylan Brooks for Ben Simmons, and we can't do this trade until after the new league year starts when cap and free agency and all the money kind of becomes available. What do you say? And what you think of that offer is, again, it's an experiment in regional bias. There's Memphis fans who swear up and down that that's a terrible trade for Memphis, which I find hilarious because you're basing it off of the potential of what Ja Morant could be, whereas Ben Simmons, and again, this is a purely speculative thing. There is no rumor. There is no source. I just wanted to see what the reaction would be. Ben Simmons is an all-NBA player, arguably. He's in that conversation, top 15 or 20 guy in the league, and he doesn't shoot threes in a league where it's all about shooting three-pointers. So if he ever adds that level to his game, he's Giannis, and that's not an over-exaggeration. Like, he could be the Greek freak type of player if he added a perimeter aspect to his game. He has that physicality. He has that athletic skill and ability. So but that's a great kind of measure of what you just said. How much do you value a top two or three pick? How much do you value, if you're Memphis, keeping that number two overall in that scenario, getting Ja Morant, having the same benefit that you have with Jaren in terms of, yeah, you only have him for 4 years, but then you have restricted free agency. You can match offers. You can offer your own max contract. In theory, you've got him for about 8 years. Okay, that doesn't mean they're happy for all 8 years, as we're seeing with Anthony Davis, but you have control of their rights for essentially 8 seasons at least. How much is that valuable compared to what you already know exists in terms of a great player, whether it's Ben Simmons or somebody of that ilk? So it really is kind of a interesting balancing act and dichotomy, and it really comes down to preference. But I agree with you, Jeffrey. History suggests that those top three or so picks are valued pretty highly by league executives, and it takes a lot to get your hands on them.
And on top of that, when we've seen, you know, a team move up, they typically move up a spot or two. Like, going from
right.
2 to 8 is interesting because we just don't see it very often. And I guess the argument would be, well, Mike Conley isn't usually made available. But, I mean, there's lots of guys that are kind of in Conley's type situation where it's beneficial probably for a franchise to move him, and we just don't see those types of deals made. You know what I mean?
Sure, and I think people have to keep the perspective of just 2.5 months ago when we were talking about the trade deadline. Utah wanted to send Derek Favors, Ricky Rubio, and a heavily protected lottery first-round pick, depending on the rumor or report you believe, the protections might be a little bit different. Maybe throw Dante Exum in there, and that's where they lost the deal. And now folks are trying to talk themselves into Conley being worth a top two or three pick in this draft. It's just so funny how the value of things fluctuated. It's kind of like how a player like Darius Garland, who hasn't played literally in months, I think only played 4 or 5 games in college, his stock is rising. Why? It's rising because their vision of what he could be or what the idea of him in your mind is rising, not him itself. So it really is kind of interesting to see how that trade value fluctuates. There's no denying that Conley is more valuable now than he was at the trade deadline because of how he ended the season. But that value, again, he's more valuable to people in Memphis than he would be most other places. And most other places probably don't view Conley the way that he deserves to be viewed. The truth is in the middle. If you take the rights to the 8th overall pick and Mike Conley, that probably gets you up to 5th or 6th, depending on who's sitting there. But at the same time, like we mentioned, it's going to be Bol Bol, or it's going to be Cam Reddish, or it's going to be somebody like that. Is that really moving up for and using the asset that is Mike Conley to get? I don't think the opportunity cost there is worth it.
Well, and Kevin Pelton pointed out yesterday, it obviously depends on the trade partner, because if the trade partner is someone like Utah, you could make the argument that Conley actually lost a little trade value because the idea of getting him at the trade deadline was you were going to try to get 3 playoff runs out of him. Now that you've waited to the summer, you're only going to get 2 out of them. And he pointed out that that could work against him. But indeed, if your trade partner is someone like a Phoenix, someone like perhaps the Knicks, or someone perhaps like the Bulls, a team that
Lakers,
yeah, that's ready to win, but they obviously weren't a contender this year, then obviously maybe the value changes a little bit. But you know, now that we kind of saw what the offer was at the deadline, and obviously that was limited partners, what do you think a realistic return for Conley would be?
A young player and a first-round pick. And I go back to the baseline of the Lakers. And this would, again, all these deals that we suggest where it seems like the salary cap is, you know, thrown off, it would have to be one of those things. And the Grizzlies have done this throughout their history. Where, okay, we'll do this on July 1st.
You know, we'll agree to it in principle now. We'll do it when cash space becomes available, all that stuff. Conley for Lonzo Ball and a future first from the Lakers. I think that that is fair value. Not saying that that's exactly right. You could argue on one hand that, you know, Memphis is giving up the better player, obviously, in the deal, and maybe you throw in a Josh Hart or another protected first-round pick or maybe a couple of seconds. On the flip side, if you're the Lakers, I mean, you're essentially limiting yourself in free agency, taking a big chunk of the money that LeBron James is supposed to be recruiting people with, and you're giving that into a 31-year-old point guard who is productive, but Mike Conley's not as sexy as Klay Thompson, Kyrie Irving, Kemba Walker, insert free agent name here. So both fan bases are going to have negatives about that type of a deal, but you're getting back Alonzo Ball if you're Memphis, a 21-year-old point guard who has shown solid defensive skills, who can facilitate, he can be a good playmaker in the pick and roll. His game should fit well next to Jaren Jackson Jr., which should be the prism that every deal is made through. In my article I wrote for the blog today over at grizzlybearblues.com, I talk about that. Jaren's the alpha and the omega now. He's the one that you're looking at and saying, can this guy play with Jaren Jackson Jr.? I think Lonzo Ball can. And if you get a 2022 first-round pick from the Lakers when LeBron may not be there anymore, Conley almost certainly won't be there anymore, you have no idea if the Lakers are going to be good or not, you can do to the Lakers what other teams have done to you in the past and say, yeah, that's a first-round pick two or three seasons down the road, but if the Lakers are bad again or if the Lakers fall out of contention, all of a sudden you have a lottery pick on your hands in 2022 or 2023 if it's protected for 2022. So to me, that's a good starting point, a young player and a first-round pick. It helps both sides. Memphis gets tools for a rebuild. The Lakers get a star scoring point guard who can be a second or third fiddle to LeBron and not dominate the ball, not be somebody that has to take up LeBron's shine, so to speak. I think Conley makes about as much sense to be next to LeBron as any player in the NBA right now in terms of fit mentally and physically.
Joe, we appreciate it as always, my man. Hope you had a great spring break, and we will talk to you down the road, my man.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Thank you, buddy.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.